Welcome to the Get Clients Now, Get Hired Now Facilitator Teleforum for October 2007. Today's topic is strategies for building relationships with a niche audience. And this is CJ Hayden speaking, and also here today are Joan Friedlander and Frank Traditti. We have some thoughts to share with you about this topic, and we'd also like to hear what you think and any experiences that you have with relationship building. Anybody else join us who'd like to check in while I was off turning on our recording? Okay, so welcome everybody. Here's the reason that we decided to focus on this particular topic. It's been my experience that building relationships with people in an identifiable niche is one of the most effective and reliable ways to get clients, whether that's attracting participants to group programs or selling programs in-house to businesses and organizations or working with clients one-on-one. If you can become well-known in your market niche and gain the trust of your potential clients, of referral sources, and of centers of influence, all aspects of your sales and marketing can become much more effortless. But I think that to many of us, the process of relationship building can be a little mysterious. What does it really mean to build relationships with people, and exactly how do you go about it? And we're hoping today to take away some of that mystery and provide some specific techniques for building stronger relationships. So to get started, let's provide some definition of relationship building and its role in sales and marketing. And I'm going to kick us off by asking Joan, what would you say about that question?
Well, first of all, CJ, I think it's a really interesting question. As I was thinking about it, I think that we tend to collapse all three together. And so I think part of what we're here to do is to pull it apart a little bit and look at the relationship building aspect. And I would say it's about finding ways to make connections with people, to look for opportunities and situations where they can get to know you better and vice versa. And given the importance of the know, the like, and the trust factor for someone in a service business, focusing on making connections and becoming known for who you are and what you offer makes a lot of sense. We know from the Get Clients Now program that marketing is all about telling people what you do and using a variety of strategies and tactics to do that. And if all goes well, effective marketing will lead to a presentation of some sort with a subset of people we meet who will then decide to purchase our services or register for our programs. And in today's fast-paced world, where we and our prospective customers are overwhelmed with marketing from all kinds of places, the more you can do to make connections with people, the easier it will be for people to say yes to you if what you offer is something that will help them address their concerns. So there's definitely a connection between marketing, selling, and relationship building. And so what we're doing today is again, pulling that apart to see what it means to us and to the people we want to do business with. Building relationships is an integral part of the marketing conversation. And I think it's the part that really gets you focused on the needs and interests of your target audiences. So I think it helps if you like or even love your prospects and customers, which makes it easier to understand their needs and wants and therefore easier to make the connections with the people that you want to do business with. And in addition to that, with understanding who you serve, who you want to serve, and what their needs are, you'll probably be more creative and have more fun doing it. And I'm always about having fun.
Yes,
wherever
thanks for that,
possible.
Joan.
Right. Marketing can be, sometimes doesn't feel like fun. So the idea of being able to connect with people, I think, can really help with that. And CJ, what else would you say about the differences?
Well, I tend to define relationship building very similarly to how I define networking. It's the process of building and maintaining a wide variety of contacts who might become clients or referral partners or sources of information, ideas, and even more contacts. And what building relationships does is it allows sales to happen naturally. instead of needing to be focused on, oh, I must talk to this person in order to get business, it allows you to focus on, I should be talking to this person to get to know them better. And if we get to know each other better, I know what they need and they know what I do, then business is going to happen naturally as a result of that, and it won't have to be such a results-driven endeavor, these conversations. I won't have to invest so much in thinking every time I talk to somebody, business must result.
And those are really, yeah, those are great points.
Frank, what would you say about relationship building and how it's different from sales and marketing?
Yeah, I'm not typically the black and white guy, but in this, when it comes to this topic, I'm very clear about what I think, and that is, I think in the purest sense that marketing and selling cannot exist without relationship building. They're so tightly connected, and that if you are trying to market and sell in what would be the traditional definition of marketing and selling, that if you haven't built relationships, it in my opinion will fail, and it's got to be that first and foremost thing on your mind is, how do you connect, how do you build those relationships up? How do you get to a deeper level? And Joan, I like to, I'm going to just tag off of what you said earlier, which was the know, like, and trust factor. When we're in conversations and we're connecting at a level that people have heard our names, or I've heard about you, or I think I know something about you, or I like your style, I feel comfortable when I'm in your presence, and I get a sense that you care about me, even if I've just met you. Builds up to that final crescendo, I call it. It says not only do I like you, but I feel you have enough expertise in solving my problem. And especially when building a niche or working in a niche, knowing, liking, and trusting is so important when it comes to that relationship building side.
That's great, Frank. I think that's a terrific perspective for us to have that, you know, it's just really, it's an essential part of this process. It's not something that you do, you know, when you run out of hot leads.
Right.
So in just a minute, we're going to start talking about some of the logistics and how-tos of the process. Anybody else have anything they'd like to say about this initial question of what is relationship building and how is it different from sales and marketing?
This is Chris Peterson. You know, I really enjoy what's being discussed. You know, we've Bruce and I work for a consumer electronics retailer based in Seattle, Washington. It's been in business for over 50 years, and we've been a successful mom and pop organization with at one time 20 stores up and down the West Coast. And we've been acquired by Best Buy a few years ago. We're moving into an outside sales position of professional services more than I think historically we're more transactionally oriented. And as we move outside and we sell more professional services, I couldn't agree more that, you know, the relationship that you have, the rapport that you build, the ability to get into the customer's needs, wants, and desires really allows you to open up sales capabilities that you never had before if you're stuck in the transactional mindset. So I love where this is going, and we've been preaching this for years, and so it's really drinking the Kool-Aid that we so enjoy serving.
Is it the competitive advantage?
Absolutely, it's a competitive advantage because I think a lot of retailers don't really understand the important element of rapport. What happens, I think, in America today is in most retail environments is that you go straight to product and price, and they skip that crucial initial phase of establishing rapport. And so you never get to the desire element, and so you sell down more often than you sell up.
You know, that's such a helpful perspective, and I think that sometimes looking at the retail environment can really help those of us who are professional service providers and work with professional service providers to really understand how much difference the ongoing relationship you have with a provider can make. While you were talking about that, the metaphor that popped into my mind is here in my neighborhood, there are probably easily a dozen places that I could go and get a cup of tea. And in fact, there's really only one place that I go and get a cup of tea. Why is that? It's because the guy behind the counter gives me a big smile and he remembers what brand I drank.
Oh. Yeah. And retail is a really tough environment right now. Mm-hmm. It gets trickier all the time, and the products that we sell become more and more complex all the time. And if you can get a customer to return and recommend, that is the height of that personalized relationship. And if you can't get them to return and recommend, really all you're doing is transactional business.
Yeah, and that transactional business being a commodity is when you get into the situation of really needing to start selling on price. And if that's the only way that you can get customers, boy, is that a really discouraging environment to be doing business in.
That is correct. And it's a downward spiral because then you can't attract and retain professional sales associates. And it's a self-fulfilling prophecy that, who can drive to the bottom of the profit equation the fastest.
Boy, you never win on the price point.
No, you really don't. Well, so let's look at one of the basic questions, I think, that needs to be solved in order to get to the how do you do this. And it's the question of how do you define the best target niche to build relationships with in the first place? So, Joan, what would you say about that question?
Well, I do think it's a critical piece of this because as service professionals and here on the call today, specifically facilitators of the Get Clients Now or Get Hired Now program, we could go about this by, I'll take anybody, but then how do you build a relationship with anybody? So the question of defining the best target market to build relationships really, I think, fine-tunes the conversation. And the question about how, there are many, many ways how. My experience says slowly and one step at a time. And I think starting with if you're starting out, it's with your best guess for the moment. But there's some questions I'll offer for you to consider to help you define who your target market or niche audience would be. If within your coaching or consulting or now audio-video retail business represented on the call, who are the people that you already serve? Would they also be good candidates for your group program? Are there people who you've met who can't afford your one-on-one services that would be interested in a group program where they could come in and work with you at a lower price point? And if so, how would you describe them? Are they the same as the people you work with one-on-one, or are they a little bit different? Do you come from an industry that would benefit from your Get Clients Now or Get Hired Now program? Are you a member of a professional association in an industry that you've worked in, either that you're part of now or you just have been in the past, where you can make connections with people or re-enter and offer them one of your programs? Also, think of your network of contacts. What industries or professions or organizations do they belong to? And who do you know that can introduce you and help make the connections? I wanted to offer a couple of examples of how this might look as you're thinking about who to bring your programs to. One example is of a web marketing designer and a consultant who wants to move away from web design and more towards consulting work, where it might not be easy to build that bridge just going straight out with the one-on-one services. Get Clients Now could help position this person and give him or her a way to bring people into her funnel without actually trying to convert them to consulting right away. So that's one way of putting a niche together. A successful masseuse realizes that people in her industry really need help with marketing, and she already knows other masseuses, so she puts together a program for them. So that's a very targeted niche, people she already has connections with. And then perhaps over time, She may invite people from other alternative healing modalities to take the program. And then I'm just looking from the Get Hired Now side of things. A career coach or resume writer works with, works with executives in IT that are in career transition, and she also or he also comes from IT. So let's just say this person belongs to a professional organization for women, for people in technology, and notices that people are experiencing a lot of challenges in their career. So this is another place where you can start. And no matter where you are, I mean, if you can at least initially define some segment of the population that you already have some kind of connection with, that can certainly grow and expand over time, and I'm almost certain that it will. So I'm curious if there's somebody else, you know, somebody on the call here with us today who can share with us how you've chosen your niche for your programs. Is everybody on mute?
If anybody's speaking, we can't
hear you. Did we block them out?
This is Raymond Preston in Nashville.
Hi.
And I am just getting started, but I'd be glad to tell you the niche market that I'm going to be pursuing and connecting with. And it's out of my own experience as a marriage and family therapist in private practice. And that is graduate schools prepare you to be a technician, as Michael Gerber would say, is, you know, what to do when you're in the chair as a therapist. But graduate school doesn't do anything to prepare master's levels or doctoral level therapists for building a practice, running a business. And so I've been in practice for about 20 years, but I continue to meet established counselors struggling to maintain a steady stream of clients, and particularly new counselors who are discouraged because they've got one or two clients, and it's really not the nature of counselors. We're responders. People come to us. So the idea of having to be an entrepreneur and to be involved in networking and marketing is not something that we really thought about, especially while we were in our programs. And again, forgive the redundancy, but I've interviewed therapists from different programs all over the country over a couple of decades, and there is nothing included in counselor education about building a caseload and actually you're running a business and making a living at being a therapist, particularly if you're in private practice. So I want to help my fellow counselors who got into this to begin with because they want to be helpful, and it's certainly not for lack of need in the community. It's helping them build their visibility and credibility so that they can help the people that they feel called to do so.
You know,
Raymond, that's a,
go ahead, John.
Okay. I was just going to say it's a really great example. You come from them, you are them, you understand them, and you have relationships with people already. So and I know they need it, so I'm glad that you're doing that.
Thank you.
Did you have something that you wanted to say?
You said exactly what I was going to say about that, so let me say something different, which is,
okay. You
know, I think one of the things that it's so important to look at when you're defining who your niche is how clearly can you define not just who is your specialty that you work with, but who's also your target market, and vice versa, not just who's your target market, but what's your specialty. So let me give you an example of what I mean by that. Let's say you're a Get Hired Now facilitator. Okay, the specialty is easy, career transition, right? But when you add a target market to that specialty, then what you get is a very clearly defined niche. And you can say, for example, your specialty is career transition, but your target market is midlife professional women. So now you have a niche of that includes both of those things I serve midlife professional women in career transition. It makes it so much easier to identify the universe within which you're wanting to build relationships. For a Get Clients Now facilitator, I find that a lot of people focus on either the target market or the specialty, but not both. So let's say, for example, as a Get Clients Now facilitator, okay, great, you have a specialty of how to get clients, terrific, but what target market do you want to aim that specialty toward? Well, if you picked a target market, for example, like financial services firms, a specialty of helping financial services firms getting clients is such a nice, solid, easily identifiable niche that you can become known in it. You can make contacts within it. You can become the go-to person within that niche. And it really facilitates the process of building relationships if people have a category to which they can assign you. If they can file you somewhere and say, oh, yeah, that's the coach that helps financial services firms get clients, it makes it so much easier for them to introduce you to others and them to remember what your role is in their network. So let's look next at this question of some specific techniques for how we can use the sales and marketing strategies we already know so well from Get Clients Now to how to build relationships. There's four different marketing strategies that are really particularly useful in relationship building: direct contact and follow-up, networking and referral building, public speaking, and writing and publicity. So we're going to talk about how you might use each one of those strategies, starting out with direct contact and follow-up. So let's suppose that you're a Get Clients Now facilitator and you attend a networking event in your niche and you happen to meet, let's say, the training director for a financial services firm. So here's an ideal contact for you to become someone to whom you could bring an in-house Get Clients Now program. So how could you potentially start building a relationship with this person using the strategy of direct contact and follow-up? So we're looking at this question now very specifically in order to identify, okay, building a relationship, that sounds great, but what does that actually mean? What do I do? So one of the obvious things that we very often think of is, well, you call them up on the phone and you chat about what the two of you have in common. So instead of calling them up on the phone and saying, hi, do you want to do business with me? What you're doing is saying, hi, we met at this event. We had a conversation. You said some things that interested me. I'd like to get to know you better. You have a conversation just like you might if you met somebody who you were interested in developing a friendship with at some sort of social or cultural event. So that kind of phone call very often gets kind of lost in the shuffle of thinking that you need your phone calls to be completely sales-oriented. Not necessarily so, and certainly not necessarily so for the first phone call. So let's imagine that that's a place where your relationship could begin, is a phone call like that. Or if that kind of approach doesn't come naturally to you, it doesn't feel comfortable, another approach, and this in fact is one that I use pretty religiously, is send that person an article or a link to something on the web that's relevant to whatever you spoke about when you met. Or send them a nice to meet you note. That's something that in pre-internet days we actually used to do a lot in networking and relationship building that now has just sort of dropped off the screen so far that sometimes we don't even think of it. But a handwritten note to someone saying it was nice to meet you at such and such yesterday and enclosing your business card and not pitching any business but just simply saying, hi, great to meet you, reminding you that we met, is an approach that will actually make you stand out much more than it used to because hardly anybody does it anymore. So those are three starting places for direct contact and follow-up activities that you might use. What other direct contact and follow-up techniques have any of you used to stay in contact with potential clients over time? How about asking people if they'd like to subscribe to your e-zine? Remember that one? We probably do that one a lot without even necessarily even thinking that that is a relationship building technique. Or if you don't have an easing, or maybe in addition to an easing, put them on your postal mailing list to send out periodic announcements to, whether that is a personal note or it's a flyer or it's a postcard. We do need to ask people to opt in to an easing list, but we don't necessarily need to ask people to opt into a postal mailing list. So even if somebody hasn't opted into your easing, or you didn't meet them through the internet, you met them out in the world somewhere, you know, the real world out there beyond the internet, you put them on your postal mailing list and send things to them periodically. What other things are relationship building activities in this category of direct contact and follow-up?
This is Candy Adai, and one thing I found it's relatively easy to do and works pretty well is to invite people to a teleconference call about a topic that we're both interested in, or that I know that they're interested in. So, and they show up.
Absolutely. Inviting people to any kind of event that you're giving, that someone else is giving, that you're attending, that is a great way to build relationships.
This is Chris Peterson and Bruce again. One of the things that we do is we quarterly produce a 40-plus page lifestyle magazine that really has no sales pitch to it. It's more products and services in lifestyle settings, in really premium customers' home environments. And it's a cocktail tabletop magazine that has a really long shelf life, and customers just love this. There's no pitch, there's no sell, and customers respond to it sometimes 6, 8, 10, 12 months after it's been laying around.
That's great, and I think, Chris, that's one of the things that sometimes gets lost in thinking about how we communicate with our customers now that we have the internet available, right? We rely on e-zines and emails, but something printed on paper and sent to people has a different kind of existence in their life. It does lie around. People might put it on a coffee table or in a reception area or on a bulletin board in a way that things sent by email just simply don't get exposed.
Yeah, we also, just to echo what you said earlier, we have had a long history of great success with just a thank you follow-up card that has no sales pitch attached to it, just a sincere thank you for the meeting and the potential business that you've done in the past. And customers love it. And we actually looked into a service. We were at a size where we could have had it computer-generated, and we got some great customer feedback saying, nah, that doesn't really mean much to me. If it's handwritten and sincere and just a thanks, customers love it, and they, again, will return and recommend, which in retail, that's the best thing you can ask for.
That's great, and really, I think, points up one of the things that you don't want to lose sight of is that since you're building a relationship, people want to know that you, the human being, had something to do with this thing that they're getting, whatever it is, not just an automated message of some kind, even if it is a printed automated message.
You bet, absolutely.
Even so much as, you know, let's say you're sending out a postcard mailing, right? Having a little note in the corner of the postcard that says, "Hi, Jane," right? Signed with your first name, that postcard is going to have so much more impact than if you didn't do that. Frank, what would you add to this conversation about building relationships with direct contact and follow-up?
Yeah, these are great ideas and some great activities. Just to kind of tag on, you know, I found that, again, going back to the relationship building side of this, inviting people to have fun, to do something fun, like, for instance, playing golf, tennis, or go for a hike, or go for a bike ride. Some of my best clients have come from those kinds of relationships and those kinds of activities. Invite them to, similarly to a teleclass that was mentioned earlier, invite them to another networking event or a workshop you're attending. People love the educational side of of an opportunity to learn and to broaden their experiences and their mind. And if you have a suggestion or something or an organization that you've been tied to, this is a great opportunity to invite them along with you and get some quality face time with a potential prospect and or someone in your niche who can help fill programs. Ask to stop by their office when you're in the area. And also periodically send them articles or links that you think would interest them. I come back to this knowledge piece of the knowledge of the niche market and your relationships. I think, you know, Raymond was talking earlier about his knowledge of the mindset of the niche market that he's working in. And, man, that is so important to understand what they're going through. He's got a lot of opportunities to discuss at a deep level and to share that message and to build those relationships.
You know, Frank, this is Chris again. Something that we've also had some really good success with is an after-hours wine and cheese event, and we'll get a vendor to help sponsor it to control some of the cost associated with it. And it's just a social function at one of our retail locations, and there's an educational element, and customers come in at their leisure, and they have a lot of fun, and they engage with staff, and it's very low pressure, and we've had some great results with that.
Ah, yeah, that's a great idea. I've been to several of those, whether either I've organized them or I've been to them. And you're right, there's kind of a non-stressful opportunity and activity. You don't feel pressured into it, and you're really there to have fun and to build relationships.
Yeah, Joan would show up for all these.
That's what I'm thinking.
Not for the wine, just for the fun.
Just for the cheese, right?
I'm thinking, what's so hard about marketing? All of this is fun.
Yeah, exactly. Okay.
This is Candy Adai. I have a quick question about the idea of the social networking events. If I'd appreciate any kind of suggestions from folks, who do you invite? I mean, that sounds silly, relevant to the conversation that's been going on here, but what I mean is it anybody and everybody you've been sort of wanting to seek their business or that might be interested? I mean, if you don't have a topic around it, talk to me more about that.
That's great. And actually, Candia, that's a great segue because what we're going to do is next look at the topic of networking and referral building. And,
okay.
And Frank, maybe you could incorporate some answers to that into what you have to say about that.
I can, absolutely. And this... this piece on and activity of networking and referral building is such a powerful opportunity to get deeper level relationships inside of your niche market and with potential niche markets that unfortunately sometimes it has a little bit of an uncomfortable feeling to it. The word networking sometimes summons up some pain and a little bit of fear behind it, because it sometimes feels like it's not authentic. You can't be yourself. You have to be this person maybe going traipsing around the room collecting and or giving business cards to everyone. When in fact, my motto is networking is less about getting and it's more about giving, which is giving the opportunity to help people that you met, giving the opportunity to giving into those people in your niche market. Maybe it's an education or a place where they can learn more. And so when you show up and or organize these types of events, that you want to kind of connect the dots. So getting into the question, so the people maybe you think you want to invite or you want to talk to or you associate with are people that maybe we belong to the same association. We went to or teach at the same school. I saw an article you wrote or about you. I heard you speak. Or we live in the same neighborhood. We go to the same church. Or our kids play on the same team. So these are all people that may not necessarily be in your niche specifically, they might, but can give you access to people and to other networks and maybe building that referral base up of people that you all now are building a strong and powerful relationship with. And that's the payoff here. That's the outcome at the end, is that by giving into and understanding and building that relationship up front at these events and or one-to-one, you're gonna start to see results from people that you're getting to know. And just maybe to get a little bit further into the networking venues and where you want to pick and choose to go, there are lots of places and opportunities to do this. What I suggest is you maybe you narrow it down to those networking venues or referral partners that have affinities with your specific niche market. Okay, they may be an area, so you know, maybe accountants who serve this market, or attorneys specializing in stock offerings, or business development consultants, people of those categories that meet regularly or are associated with different organizations can be the opportunity for you to get involved and get associated with a specific niche market. It might be marketing consultants or venture capitalists or entrepreneurship centers, places where people congregate that you know have a specific need, look like and appear to you and have a vision of who the people are that you want to serve, and give you access to the ability to serve them in a way where you're knowledgeable, you have the information at hand, and you can create a deeper relationship because you know where they're coming from. Joan, is there anything you want to add to that as we're talking about networking and referral building?
Yeah, there's a lot of great ideas and points being made, and I think my dogs are networking with the neighborhood, so if you can hear them, I apologize. I can hear them.
They're very good at that.
But I wanted to say one other thing specifically to what Candia asked, and, you know, who do you invite? And I'm reminded of an event that I held almost 2 years ago, and it was a pretty small event, but it was an invitation-only event. I did have a topic to discuss. It was a luncheon for women entrepreneurs, and the topic was about delegation. But I think even without the topic, I just want to share who I thought of to invite. I looked at people I'd met, some people who I'd met but were not yet clients, people who were clients and local clients. I work with people around the country, but I've worked with people in my geographic region. And I also invited them to invite people they know. And if they did, they, got a two-for-one kind of offer. So I just wanted to give that additional food for thought back to you, Candia, about who do you invite. And otherwise, I would say that networking and referral building is all about building relationships. If any of the strategies are, this is one of the key areas. And then circling back to something that CJ said earlier, I think we often mistakenly collect business cards at networking events and think about, what's the next step? How can I move these people further along in the pipeline to follow up to get the presentation? And that's, the exchange of cards is usually focused on that next step. So I want to offer a couple of other ideas about how to really start to build connections with people in that exchange of cards. If in the conversation they're telling you about something and you think if you've got a newsletter, you can actually offer them ask them if they'd like to subscribe to that if what you write about seems relevant to something they've said, or if you've written an article, you can offer the same thing. So I don't think the exchange of cards is always, again, to go back into building relationships and adding value, what can you offer this person when they give you your card? Otherwise, I have a long time ago I wrote Jones' top 10 tips for marketing without suffering, so you can see what I used to think about it. But I would say, again, going back to the idea of building relationships, belong to no more than 3 networking organizations that reach your target market or people who connect with them. With the idea, it's more effective to go deeper rather than wider to build relationships with people. And honor your values and interests. Choose marketing activities and organizations which values and activities align with your own values and interests, which will help you be interested in people. And then the last thing I want to say on this topic is something that the late Jennifer White used to say, which is stop talking about you and find out about them. And this will give you many clues about what you can offer by way of follow-up to make the most difference to the people that you meet. So it's not just about, shall we talk?
That's a really helpful perspective, Joan, and I think it's sort of the linchpin of being successful at building relationships through networking, is really having that orientation about what's this person all about, what are their needs, what are their interests, what do they want, what are they looking for, who are they? And if you can do that, you're going to find a zillion different ways that you can expand on the relationship that if you're focused solely on you and the message you want to deliver, you'll never even see. So any other comments or questions about networking and referral building in this context? Let's look next at public speaking as a strategy for building relationships. And Joan, what would you say about that?
Well, public speaking, I think, is also a great way, it's certainly a great way to get in front of a larger audience of people in your target market, and choosing your speaking venues and developing speaking topics that are relevant to their interests and are a natural lead into your programs is just really the start of this. Unlike networking and referral building and direct contact and follow-up, it's different to speak in front of a group of people, but there are some ways to help make the connections. First thing I might suggest is talk to the contact for the organization and find out about your audience. Even if you give the same marketing or career talk over and over again, have some questions to help you find out about the organization or the company and the people you'll be talking to, so you can actually tailor your program to them to give them a sense that you're actually talking to them. If you can, if it makes sense, attend the entire event while you'll be speaking so that you can meet people one-on-one before you get up to talk. And if it's a professional organization where it makes sense that you would either just visit as a guest or might belong to, attend the meeting the month before so that you can start to develop one-on-one relationships with people. While you're speaking, find ways to engage the audience with each other and with you. Include opportunities for people to ask questions, to make comments, to give feedback. So rather than being the speaker on the pulpit with all the wisdom, find ways to interact with people. And then I think the last thing I want to say about what to do with, how to build relationships with public speaking is before you get to the event, have 1 to 3 ways that those who are interested can hear a little bit more, hear from you after your presentation. Do you have a newsletter they can subscribe to that's really standard? Is there a special report, something you've written that you can offer to send them by email? And most certainly, if you have a program to offer, give them a way to sign up for it. I think one of the opportunities that sometimes is missed is how to bridge the time that you're in front of this group of people to start to have individual contact with the people that you're speaking to.
That's really great, Joan, because I think that the speaking that we do very often we think of as this is a great way to attract new people into our network. But if we look at it in this broader picture of building relationships, we want to look at how does it fit there, not just when it's the start of a relationship, but also when it's a step in it or the middle of it. And as you suggested, you know, if you go the month before and meet people, then you're going to have a much friendlier audience to speak to the month later, because you're already going to know some of those folks, and you're going to be further along in the curve. And I'd also say use any speaking events that you schedule as a way to keep in touch with the people who you already know. Invite people who you already know to attend whenever you speak. That's a great way of building up the friendliness and camaraderie of the audience, as well as going to the next step in the relationship with the people who you're inviting to be there, who ordinarily wouldn't be attending that particular event. So any other questions or comments about public speaking as a strategy for building relationships?
You know, CJ, this is Frank, and just a quick comment on that, that what I found is that some of the best relationship development and building comes after that talk, when you're finished and people come up. And I call it networking on steroids. and people are just coming to you and want to talk, want to hear more, whether you're the sage on the stage or someone that is, you know, you've provided great advice and opportunity and to hear you speak. It's they want to be associated with you. And man, that's such a powerful way to create that deeper level of niche marketing and relationship building.
I'm glad you mentioned that, Frank, because I think sometimes it gets left out when we're planning for a speaking event, that you really do need to allow the time and space for people to connect with you afterwards. And I find that it's very important to, whenever you can, actually mention what that time and space will be. So, for example, if I'm speaking at a conference and I know that they're going to boot me out of the room 10 minutes after I'm done speaking because they got to put the next speaker into that room, I will very often say something like, "We'll need to clear this room very shortly after my talk, but I'd love to connect with any of you outside at XYZ." And that really helps providing that space.
That's a great idea.
Yeah, this is Chris. I've done a little public speaking over the years, and not knowing this that we're talking about now, I've stumbled my way through it. I spoke to builders associations, and then afterwards, you know, I had quite a few people approach me, and it really caught me off guard. And, it was like I didn't know that after I got done. You know, sometimes when you are public speaking, you almost go into autopilot, and because you're trying to make sure that you're covering your content, you don't want to get nervous, all those things that are going through your head. And then afterwards, having a flood of people approach you, it's like, wow, that was really great stuff. And it's, oh, really? I didn't know that. Right? I also did some radio talk show work and didn't give people an opportunity to understand how to reach me afterwards, and people sought me out through the retail organization I was with, but they had to find me, and I didn't give them an opportunity to say, you know, if you are interested, here's how you reach me. So I think it is important to land that message.
Great. Thanks for that. Any other quick comments or thoughts about this before we look at writing and publicity?
This is Joan. I just want to share something I just did at a conference I was a speaker for, and, you know, I think this is a rare opportunity, but something to add to the options is I made myself available for 15-minute one-on-one coaching call, coaching meetings with people at the end of the day, and that's, you know, five people signed up for those.
That's a wonderful strategy, Joan, and just a great way to give people an opportunity to really connect at a deeper level with you. Well, let's turn to the strategy of writing and publicity, the last of the four strategies for relationship building we're going to be covering today. You know, like with public speaking, often we think of writing and PR as methods of attracting new prospects instead of for building relationships with the people who we already know. But writing and publicity can actually be very powerful when you apply them to people who already know who you are, because what these activities do is they give you a reason to get back in touch in the context of being able to provide helpful or valuable information. And they boost not just your name recognition, but also your credibility. A lot of times, the only person who gets to say how good you are is you. But with writing and publicity, there's an implied endorsement from the publisher or the media outlet of you and of your work. So if you include these strategies in your mix of relationship building activities, they can really be a very valuable addition. So here's some examples of what I'm talking about. Writing original articles for your own e-zine or mailing list as opposed to simply relying on material that's written by other people. Or writing an article for your trade association, your niche's trade association's newsletter or magazine. That's a great way to precede or follow a speaking engagement, too, is to provide an article for the group's newsletter. And any time that you can put out an article to a group of people who already knows you, it really adds that credibility boost to the process of relationship building. You could even do this on an ongoing basis by being an advice columnist for an industry publication or a website, so that every month, for example, people are expecting to hear some words of wisdom from you. And having that kind of regular appearance on schedule can be a great way to build relationships with people in this context of getting that outside endorsement. The organization is saying, hey, this person is worthy of giving advice to all of you. You can also include editors and freelance writers on the list of people you're building relationships with. Include them in your network so that you can become recognized by people who are the thought leaders in your industry as a spokesperson for your niche. That's a very powerful way of continuing on in developing the relationships with people who you already know. And definitely think about who are the gatekeepers to those kinds of opportunities that maybe you should perhaps be building relationships to. And any time that you manage to get an article published or land an interview, be sure that you're using that as an opportunity not just to attract new people, but to let the people who you already know that that's happened. Send out copies of the article. Provide links to the interview to the people who are on your mailing list. If you get to do a live interview on radio or TV, invite people to listen and to ask questions if it's interactive. Having people who are part of the audience, who are those you already know, just like when you're speaking, can make the opportunity much more friendly and comfortable and provide a really beneficial atmosphere to an event like that. And finally, we mentioned earlier the idea of a wine and cheese reception. You know, I used to do a coffee and cookies open house on a regular basis, and it was a great PR event to invite people who I already knew to just come and spend some time with me and get to know each other. That kind of event is a great piece of a really useful piece of your mix of activities. And now today, periodically, I host a tea party at a local tea parlor and invite people to participate as part of that relationship building mix. So we've only got a couple of minutes left in our session today. Any other really quick thoughts on writing and publicity before we finish up?
This is Joan. I think that you've covered a lot of great things in that arena, and something you already touched upon, but I think any of these things, or many of the things that one might do that are, you know, in this realm can also be turned back or repurposed for follow-up. You mentioned, you know, sending links to your list. I would also suggest if you have a marketing kit and there's an article that, you know, maybe you've got a series of articles, well, including a pertinent one in the marketing kit you might send as a follow-up. Or having a catalog of links on your site and pointing somebody you meet to a specific link or an article. So it's you know, in addition to letting everybody know, thinking of these, you know, thinking of how you can also use some of these things that you've done publicly more personally.
That's very helpful, Joan. Thanks. Well, we've been talking about a variety of ways in the context of discussing these different strategies that you might be looking at what's the activity that's going to be comfortable for me, what's the activity that's going to be fun for me. And that's a really important piece of putting all of this together. You need to choose a mix of things that you're going to be willing to do over the long haul, that you do find enjoyable and comfortable, because it's repeated contacts in relationship building that really make the difference. So what you want to do is choose things that you can do over and over again instead of having a scattershot approach. Just like we teach at Get Clients Now and Get Hired Now, you need to pick that simple, effective list of things to do that you can do over and over again, and that's going to make the whole process a heck of a lot easier. So we need to wrap up for today. Joan, you want to tell us about the next forum coming up?
I would be happy to. We will meet up again in a combined teleforum in the new year on Tuesday, January 15th. And I can't believe I'm talking about the new year, but so it is. And the topic will be enrollment success stories, and we'll be featuring three successful facilitators who will share their enrollment secrets with the rest of us. And I look forward to that event.
Wonderful. Thanks. That's going to be fun. Great. Well, thank you, everybody, for your attendance and participation today. It's been great talking to all of you, and we'll be back here again in January.
Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Thank you.